Welcome to Awaken Calls. Every Saturday, we host conversations with guest speakers from all walks of life. Speakers whose personal journeys awaken and inspire our innate spirit of service. Thank you for coming together to plant seeds for a more compassionate society.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. My name is Pavi, and I will be your host for our weekly Global Awaken Call. Welcome, and thank you for joining us. The purpose of these calls is really to share stories and to tell stories, stories that help plant seeds for a more compassionate society while fostering our own inner transformation. We do this by holding collective conversations with guest speakers from all walks of life who inspire us through their actions to live in a more service-oriented way. And behind each of these calls is an entire team of service-based volunteers whose invisible work allows us to hold this space. Today, our guest speaker is Robert Bengston, someone who embodies the theme of art and inspiration and the question, what would love do? Here's how the call works. In a few minutes, our moderator, Ari Nessel, will engage in deep dialogue with our speaker, Robert Bengston. By the top of the hour, we'll roll into Q&A and a circle of sharing, where we invite all of your reflections and questions. Thank you, Ari, for moderating this wonderful call today. I will hand it off to you now. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Pavi. Honored to be on this phone call with you. And I feel really fortunate to be able to introduce Robert, who I got to spend some time with this week before the phone call. I'll tell you a little bit about Robert here. He believes that a new story in the world is emerging, that art can inspire people to pause, reflect, and create new realities based on collaboration and altruism. He says, new thoughts create new realities, and so the programming that we've had about separation, survival, the fittest, and all these things that are now proving to be not completely true are subject to reimagination. I love one of the things he says about his recent focus called the Inspiration Campaign. He says, we activate positive, loving, creative, and altruistic places within people. We turn that into a tangible, ever-expanding economic social force, and we wield, apply, create with that collective force from the standpoint of what would love do? We activate a divine realm of the human experience, one inspired, free will-wielding individual at a time. So with that, I get to speak with you, Robert, and I welcome you to the phone call.
Thank you so much. It's so great to be here.
Well, I'd love you know, as a basic background, for everyone here, tell us a little bit about what you're working on now.
Well, as you mentioned, this vision called Inspiration Campaign started to come to me about 4 years ago. And at the key piece to it is about I'd say participation, meaningful participation. So back in 2008, I started to do these art installations. I got these visions to make some art installations. And I've been a visual artist for 20-some years. And it was really rooted in this, I think, this old paradigm about creativity and art in terms of an artist making something and people responding to what that person made. And what I learned with these art installations, these interactive art installations, was the power of meaningful participation. And it totally added this new dimension to what art and creativity is in terms of using art and creativity to inspire someone to participate, whether it's in a thought or a word or an action. And after creating these, I created four interactive pieces. And I was just amazed and in awe, really, of how people participated. And it started me thinking around, how do I scale this? How can you scale participation in a way that is global? And really, through that process, I started getting these pieces for what Inspiration Campaign is. And over the course of the last few years, we can talk about a little bit more about what happened, but the pieces just started to come together. And I think the last, some of the last ingredients in terms of launching the next phase is really starting now. It's really kind of a perfect timing in a way that this call was set up back in November. And this week was the beginning of creating a new video and launching the next phase. And I love that this call is kind of like a coming out for the next phase of this vision that really started with these art installations and started back in 2008, which also really dovetails into my own journey as an artist. You know, what is art? How I like the title of this, the way this talk, this call was titled in terms of art and inspiration. And to me, this process that I've been on the last 8-9 years or so has really expanded the notion of what art is. To me, art and creativity inspires inspiration in the form of some form of some type of participation. And so my impulse as a human, as an earthling, and as an artist is to be figuring out ways that I can help inspire someone's self-navigation process and to do it in a way that can harness it and scale it and empower it. And that's really the pieces of Inspiration Campaign, is kind of pulling all of those pieces together and making a people-powered force that that really is driven by the other part of the title of what would love do. And that's become a bit of a mantra in my own navigation as a human, not only in what I create, but just how I try to show up every day.
There are two things that come from the call you just said. Is when I was thinking about the things coming together. When you said in your comments that what makes you come alive is one of the things is synchronicity and serendipity. And so here you are, the same week of which you've probably been working for a long time, this campaign, that you have the second stage of the campaign, you've created this new video, and then that same week it seems to, you know, align, not intentionally, but just by circumstance, with this phone call, and then the Daily Good email, which goes out to 300,000 plus people. I'm just curious, like, is that something you pay? How do you know when serendipity and synchronicity are arising? Is that sort of a guidepost in your life? And what do you learn from that when that arises?
For me, synchronicity tells me that I'm on the right path. And I think that the impulse to be of service to something greater than ourselves puts us on that path of synchronicity. So last year I read an amazing book called The Surrender Experiment. And in that book, that really shifted things for me, because the author's premise is that the universe is intelligent, that the universe has a certain divine aspect to it. And the vision is to be of service and letting the universe guide the way and sort of lead the dance, so to speak, and to participate with as much heart and soul as I can. And I think for the first couple years of Inspiration Campaign, it was more of a process of figuring out these things I needed to do. And it had a lot of struggle in many ways around it, my own personal path of becoming. And as I shift more and more to trusting and having faith in a larger picture, I find that it's a bit like navigating down a river and doing my best to stay within the flow of the river. And so this call coming together in this week and the video and the website, it's a confirmation of being in the flow and just continuing to do my best to participate with as much presence and willpower and guidance of this kind of mantra, what would love do, and trusting in the bigger picture and kind of continuing to follow the dots. So to me, it's a great confirmation always that that I'm in the flow of discovery and participation. And I think that's always an interesting gauge. Like anytime there's been synchronicity, it's against the backdrop of an emotional feeling of being in flow. So it feels so directly related, and points to a larger narrative about this whole life experience. I mean, I think at a certain level, we're really at a time in life where our whole human story is changing. You know, these fundamental questions of who are we? You know, we live in an infinite universe. Like, we're in these stardust configurations. These notions of Newtonian physics and Freudian psychology and all these survival of the fittest, all these things are changing. And for the first time, they're changing at a kind of a global scale, and in a way that's underscored by all of our old systems that were created from these old paradigms are falling apart and destroying the planet. And so we're getting this kind of double, triple wake-up call. Feels to me like humans all around are waking up from some sort of Walt Disney kind of dream spell. And as we figure out individually and collectively, how do we get in this? How do we get on this new track? And what does that look like? And I think it's completely new territory around that. And to me, this is why this feels so fundamental as something to put our attention on, because it seems to me that we have all the technology, we have all the solutions. The solutions already exist to really changing what's happening on the planet, but this aspect of our fundamental human story about who we are and about consciousness, that feels like the new frontier to me. And really, in a way, that's at the heart of these projects that I'm doing, because I feel the power of embodying a new story, you know, creating something, creating a people-powered movement and a very specific kind of social economic power that's being guided by this mantra of what would love do is that new example will... Examples like that feel like breaking the four-minute mile to me as we embody these new kinds of organizations and new kind of impulses about how people participate and why people participate. The ripples that will set in motion are infinite in many ways.
I love all the things you just said. I'm picturing like all the normal, like the acronyms you see for like, what would Jesus do and what would Buddha do, and I really, what would love do is, it seems most compelling to me as if you're going to go through something pithy statement about thinking about how to respond to, you know, the challenges and the opportunities of life. That seems just really compelling to me. Is that a question that sort of that helped guide the foundation and the startup of Inspiration Campaign? And how is that asking that question, like, you know, do you continually ask that question? How has the answer changed over time?
Yeah, that is the light on the bow of the boat for Inspiration Campaign and for my own life. The reason that I like that so much, too, is that when I've heard it in the past ascribed to specific people, it doesn't create as much space for each individual and me to interpret that, because you could have a situation and have 10 people there and have each one answering, what would love do? And there'll be 10 different answers based on where each person is. And so... the answer to that for me, because it's an open-ended question, there's not a clear answer. And so it enables me, and I think anyone who asks it, to first step out of themselves as a bit of a witness, which I think is really important in our own transformation of using our free will to make new, we're using our free will in three ways, as I see it. We're choosing our thoughts, we're choosing our words, and we're choosing our actions. And there's really no other choice that we're making besides those three. And so what shapes our choices? And it's a narrative about who we are and what life's about and all these beliefs and stories. And when I ask that question, what would love do, it circumvents, it shoots around all the stories. And it asks the question that there isn't a clear answer to. And it enables me to reach for what I think is the most life-affirming response, because that love would be life-affirming rather than life-diminishing. And so it enables me, based on who I am and who my character is, to reach for the most life-affirming choice I can make. And that's what changes over time, because my choices in this moment of being life-affirming will be different. I think my choices in the future will be even more life-affirming, because as I adopt these new narratives and as I embody this notion of using my free will in that way, it keeps on expanding. But I think the key and what's beautiful about it is that we're all at different places, because we've all had different backgrounds. We've all had different, we've kind of been indoctrinated by different beliefs and stories in this process of shifting our consciousness. Feels like the way we do that is in the intention to choose to be life-affirming. And so that, to me, that question is so beautiful, because what love looks like is through the choices of all of us as individuals. I mean, that's the beauty of humanity, is that at some future vision that I have of earthlings and humanness is a evolution of each individual answering that question with their lives, and it's going to look completely different. I mean, for one person, what love would do would be to teach children. Another person, what would love do would be to grow apples. And so that impulse of who did we come here to be? Who did my life force coming into the Stardust configuration on this planet at this time? Why am I here? I think I figure that out by asking that question. And that's the same with Inspiration Campaign. You know, as we come together and create this force, and we figure out how do we use this force in the most conspicuous, life-affirming way, in this moment, it's not – that question will continue to evolve, and to me, it'll evolve in the most powerful way by being guided by that question.
So much of what you said reminds me of the nonprofit I'm part of that you're familiar with, the Pollination Project.
Yeah.
Which is small grants for people doing service work around the world. And it's this acknowledgement that we all have a unique capacity for goodness. And every person, it's like you said, we're like this hard, you use the word stardust, how it came, this unique configuration. But we're all like in a certain space, time, with all different, privilege and wisdom and relationships that create a unique quality that allows us to serve in a different way than anyone else. And I think that's, I'm just reflecting as I say that about how if we come up too much model anyone's actions that we want to follow as opposed to be inspired by their motivations, we lose, we start copying and emulating someone else as opposed to stepping into our own greatness that we're supposed to follow into. And then, of course, how that changes over time is remarkable. Like you talked about the Inspiration Campaign, how in the beginning you probably had this what would love do, but it became, held down by this to-do list and this task list of what you had to do, and the love aspect of it maybe was lost. I'm just really curious, How do you stick this What Would Love Do in this campaign is this outgrowth, and hold that on as a process basis as opposed to an outcome basis?
That's a great question. I think the essence of the project is to activate, uplift, and inspire that quality that you just described within people. And so its whole vision is about that. And so how that shows up is kind of twofold. One is the process of activating that in the experience of creating inspiration campaign in the first place. So that's why the whole premise of it is crowdsourcing the content that becomes the advertising and creating a model that shows the power of individuals so we can activate the reality of how individuals and people matter, and celebrating that and approaching it from the beginning from the standpoint of seeing people in the way that you described, right? Like, when I think about the culture, our education system, our media, everything, when I think about what do they think people are in terms of a starting point? Do they think people are unique, divine expressions of the divine here to fulfill their own embodiment of answering the question of what would love do, and we're wanting to support that in people? And that was not my experience growing up. I mean, the world didn't look at me that way. The systems in my environment and my culture didn't address me that way. I was, our notion about who humans are has really been either, it's been small, it's been negative, and everything of our systems is built on that premise. I mean, so much of our notions, in my sense of who humans are, was kind of really shaped by Freud, who was studying people with mental problems after a major war and came up with this narrative about who people are, which was just not very impressive. And I think that's really set the stage for all the old paradigms. And so by creating a power, a movement, a social input that is rooted in a totally different opinion about who humans are, you know, what is the life experience, that will ripple out in ways that will be really palpable to people, I think, because as we create these experiences and these specific creations that are rooted in a whole different opinion about who humans are, and we can do that in the most conspicuous way possible as a way of activating that within people, because it's my belief that most people, the majority of people on the planet, know that truth when they hear it. They just haven't been, it hasn't been modeled much. And so by I think that the impulse of what Inspiration Campaign is coming here to be is building the movement based on this new premise and then using the power to activate that in as many people as possible. So it becomes this notion of harnessing the goodness, the good-heartedness within people, within individuals, by inviting them to participate from that premise, and then saying, hey, let's use our power to give that in some form to as many people as possible, which is why the first, kind of the foundation of what do we want to create together will be advertising, because 250 good-hearted people, we can create a billboard that gives, you know, 300,000 gifts in the community. And the fact that it's all rooted in this different notion of what humans are and what we want to activate and cultivate within ourselves and within others, that feels like kind of magic to me. And and it feels like a bit of a social experiment in that way too, because we're not used to participating so much in this way. We're usually trying to be motivated to participate or scared into participating. And so I think these, you know, the more we have creations that are rooted in a new notion of what a human is, that is what's going to change everything.
I really like that you're talking about this being an experiment, because I think like that to-do list you were talking about sort of starts going away when the moving to experiment feeling of it almost brings does that inspire like a curiosity and playfulness in what you're doing, as opposed to an outcome orientation?
Yeah, I think that sense of curiosity feels really important, because as we figure out, you know, what does it look like to get on a totally different track as a humanity? I don't know. I don't think anybody knows, because this has never happened before, you know, at such a wide range, especially with that. It's like all these factors are coming together that are enabling this. I mean, the fact that we're on this call with people all over the world is part of that, like these opportunities for like-minded and like-hearted people to start coming together. And I think as we approach this with that level of curiosity and the humility of saying, you know, this has not happened before. You know, what does it look like to change the human story? Like when I hear a lot of different ideas about, you know, creating change, to me, if this new human story, this new aspect of what life is and who we are and how do things happen, that to me feels like the very source of the river. You know, like a lot of these conversations about problems seem to be kind of downstream quite a bit, whether it's about politics or agriculture or healthcare or anything like that. To me, that's way downstream. And that when we get to the source of our creative act as an individual and as a humanity, if we address it at the stream, everything else changes. I mean, I've been feeling that so much in my own life as I shift my core beliefs about who do I think I am and how did things happen and all of that, how I show up in the present moment and what I want to create and what I want to do with my life. It's changed a lot from the last, from the past, you know, as I emerge from my culture and in my 20s and 30s and why I did what I did has really been changing so much. And my life experience has been changing so much as I've gotten closer and closer to the impulse to get to the source of the river, so to speak, and do that in a way that is full of humility and curiosity, because it's totally new territory for me as an individual. And when I look at it, humanity, for us as a collective, and that, I think that's never happened in the way that it's happening now on the planet. And we're all here in our way to participate in that, because our humanity is a sum of all of the choices, all of these free will choices we're making as individuals. And every moment, it's the collective of that that can be defined as our humanity or our civilization. And so it's like that. The other part of Inspiration Campaign is really recognizing the power that we have as individuals, because I think there's a feeling of powerlessness or jadedness about the state of affairs, and like, what can I do? It's like when we look at the world and what, you know, all the problems, it's hard to feel. I find it has been hard to feel empowered. But the truth is, the good-willed, good-hearted people on the planet are the majority, and when we continue to get together against the backdrop of what would love do, that's a creative force that can create and change anything.
One of the mantras of service space is this idea of change yourself. change the world. And I'm hearing a lot in your story about how, you know, like you were at one point very motivated by this Freud's view of psychology of man. And then I'm hearing like how your view has changed. How much do you like correlate, you know, the way you see the world as a reflection of you versus the world changing?
That's a good question. I see, you know, I change by two ways, it seems. One is life-affirming input. A quick little story. About a year and a half ago, almost 2 years ago, I was my father left Earth, and I was back home in the home that my parents grew up, that I grew up in, and was clearing out the basement, and I was kind of going through books, and this little book caught my eye, and I put it off to the side, and it was written in 1908, and it was called The Great Within, and I was so struck by the power of the words of these new beliefs about empowering. It was like this whole notion of who we are as individuals, and it was so fresh. And it was 108 years old, and I was just struck by the power of beliefs and the power of story and this notion of who we are, because my the way I see the human experience are these three pieces, which is the body. You know, these stardust configurations we are that has its miraculous intelligence that does its, you know, millions of things every second to keep the body kind of alive and working. The life force that inhabits the stardust configuration, which I think of as a soul or spirit or multidimensional sort of non-physical, some kind of energy that's inhabiting, making the stardust configurations animated. And the last is mind. And I see the three of those when they're on the same team, so to speak, and when the essence of who we are is driving the bus, and our bodies and our minds are in service to that in terms of answering our lives with the question of what would love do, and having a faith in the mystery of being here in this stardust configuration. The power of the mind is evident in how cultures have changed so much and how they're changing now almost decade by decade. But the difference in how humanity has looked is all about mind, all about culture. And so that's shaped by the beliefs and stories of each individual. And that's what I think we really have the power to change. And the mind, to me, seems to be the kind of the gatekeeper of the experience, of our life experience, because it's like by being here on this planet, you're looking out at the world through some kind of tinted glasses based on your beliefs and your stories. So everything how you interact with the world is shaped by that. And so by my own process of striving to look at my mind from a witness point of view has helped me just see the beliefs and stories that I have and see them from a perspective that allows me to question them and be curious about them and change them. I mean, when I was back east with that process of clearing out the house, and I was really reflecting so much with my father in hospice, it's like I had this witness experience of just acknowledging at a certain level how much I was shaped by this man. And not only this man, but what was his relationship with his parents? Like, how much was he loved? What were his beliefs and stories? And I really had this power of, like, I was almost just kind of shocked to just realize the 24/7 indoctrination that I had with my schooling and my culture. I grew up on the East Coast, and everything seemed totally, quote-unquote, normal. And yet, It's full of all sorts of assumptions and beliefs and stories that, you know, shaped me in terms of how I aspired. Who did I think I was? And I find that as I'm changing, you know, it's like this kind of comes back to that the you know, service spaces premise of that's how change happens. And so, like that's what I can do, is to keep questioning and keep witnessing and keep feeling open to embodying new beliefs about myself and the notion of who did I come here to be, and embarking into that as this curious journey of discovery.
Wow, that's I love how you brought that all full circle together, interrelated, and to integrate all these different parts of your life. I'm reflecting on some of the aspects of this Labor of Love project of yours here, an inspiration campaign. And it really aligns with this this idea that Nipun Mehta, who's one of the co-founders of Service Space, talks about this idea of Gandhi 3.0. I was just watching a video, a talk on it, and he talks about, like, you know, the first Gandhi 1.0 was this way that a great leader sort of responded to offered his teachings to many, so one to, like, you know, thousands. Then his spiritual successor, Vinoba, saw you can have more connections in with the same number of people on a one-to-one basis, and he walked around India, and he helped convince people who had more land than they needed to share it with those who didn't have any land, which is their source of their own well-being. And the 3.0 is moving instead to a distributed network, and so, you know, moving from this idea of more from plan and execute to search and amplify, and from leadership to laddership, and it's uses. And it becomes more about these, not the number of connections we have, but the quality of those connections and the infinite possibility of our connections in those networks. He gives this one story about how after Hurricane Katrina went through Louisiana, like, all these trees were knocked down. And the one kind of tree that was really resilient and wasn't knocked down was the oak tree. And what they saw was that these oak trees had that their roots were not only they deep roots, but they interconnected with all the other roots of the other oak trees around them. So we basically, in effect, one tree would have 100 miles of root because it was tied with other roots.
Yeah.
And it just created this resilient ecosystem. And is that an analogy that rings true for you in terms of, like, this distributed network you're creating here? That you're of people crowdsourcing funding for this project and choosing what the inspiration and the words are that go on these billboards and where they go, and that they feel like there's less of a sense of individuality and more of a cohesion of a network. Influence, you know, other people further, you know, 50 miles away, but connected to the same root structure.
Yeah, that's great. I love that analogy with the trees. That's one of my favorite earthlings as well, are oak trees. So it really is a great reminder. Yeah, you know, that is the basis of the vision, because it's celebrating the individual tree. Right, because the tree that didn't fall down because of all the individual trees that created the network. So the network's as strong as the individuals that are participating. So the notion of creating this project, you know, creating this force by acknowledging the power of the participants, right? Because if you have, say, let's say we have 100,000 people. Let's say we have 1 million people giving $5 a month to create this force, right? So you have this amazing power that can be wielded in some way. And it's and the power is because of the collective. And if one person says, I probably don't need to participate because there's 999,999 people that are doing it. They're not going to miss really my $5 a month. And what I love about something like this is on the surface, that's true. But if everyone has that attitude and doesn't participate, then all the power goes away. So it's this balancing act between, you know, on the one hand, I don't really matter. And on the other hand, I matter immensely, because that's how the power gets created, is in the individual person saying, I'm going to participate, or in that individual tree with its roots creating the network. And so I'm really excited in this kind of social experiment to blow on those embers and to remind the individuals that this is all happening because of you. And so the other piece of this, which I think is really interesting, is that right now we're starting this new chapter. So we're raising money to build the website, the new website that can scale and kind of contain this and turn crowdsourcing and crowdfunding into this power and into this transforming advertising. And so what's going to be part of the process is that, say, the first 250 people that are participating and they create one billboard month after month, and that billboard's going to be reaching, say, 250,000 people, 250,000 moments every month. And so that one person is going to have the experience of giving 250,000 gifts. And then fast forward when there's, say, 10,000 people now giving. So a bunch of other people have come, and now we're reaching 10 million gifts every month. That first person that started at the 250, every month their ability to have given more gifts will keep increasing. So it's a notion of the power, the impact that each individual has will keep increasing based on the same contribution. And to me, that is an alternative to this kind of scarcity model. It sort of feels like the power of an individual seed. To me, it's like a seed is infinite, because that one seed can create another plant, and that plant can create thousands of seeds, and each of those seeds can create, you know, thousands of new plants, and it just can kind of go on forever. And that's the same with love. You know, love doesn't diminish when you give it away. And so there's this new story that I think we can tell and activate within someone that that celebrates their participation and their choice, and reminds everyone that the collective force is only happening because of that individual choosing to participate. And on the backside of that, to have this ever-expanding, conspicuous force in the community, I think will create these two really important bookends that will celebrate how much we matter as participants, and then have a way to show the power of the collective force. And I think it's that interplay, I think, of recognizing the power of individuals, and then figuring out this way to harness that into this force, like the display of all the oak trees still standing. You know, it's like in that example is the illustration of the power of the individual. And so that's part of the impulse with the project is to celebrate those two pieces, because I think that's going to be a part of the new story of the power of individuals, and showing those two ends of the spectrum.
Yeah, I'm thinking just in general how little meaning people ascribe to their wealth, and I think that's because money in general has been more of a destructive force than a creative force. And a lot of people think that, you know, there is what can I do with $5? What can I do with a small amount? And it's as you said, it's when a large group of people come together doing small actions. That's the sweetness arises. What's possible? It's this, you know, this collaboration. I was watching your video this morning from your website, and it really just beautiful illustration of how, like, if you hit a critical mass in an area of these billboards, I can really feel the difference of how it changes people, how they show up around in the communities. These constant reminders, because right now there's all these constant reminders instead of, like, you're not enough. You know, you need more. There's not enough love. You know, that consumption is going to breed happiness, and there's all these sort of things that are not true from my experience. And the antithesis is what you're talking about in this video I saw reminds me a lot of what I just saw when I was at this place called Environmental Sanitation Institute, which is part of the Gandhi Ashram in India. And they have all these signs and murals all around, and there's just these constant reminders of, like, I'm an interconnected being. That there's love within me, there's love around me. You know, it's sort of like this idea of which what we pay attention to grows. And I see in this project, and I saw from that same experience I just had, is that as my attention was put to these messages and to the people that were showing up around there, that those qualities became real and a new story evolved out of it. And, I'm guessing that's sort of what you're hoping to see rather than in a small space, but in a much larger realm of experience for people who don't have the privilege of going to the Gandhi Ashram, but have the privilege of walking through the streets of, you know, pick your city.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I think positive input leads to positive output. Another piece too of this project is that as more and more people come together, you know, there's going to be all sorts of different ways that we can explore and create new conversations, new kinds of input. The vision through the website is to use it as the project kind of is this 1-2 combo. You know, one is creating this force and creating a new voice of social input in our communities by transforming part of the problem, which is advertising. So you kind of have these, like, multi-level impacts, you know, celebrating the individual, harnessing individual goodness into a power, and, you know, using that power to disrupt and transform this old paradigm that we've become so accustomed to is, like, that's just the way it is. We're just, you know, reconciled to accept this barrage of input, because there aren't really many mainstream social forces that are giving us an alternative. And so, you know, in the process of creating that, that's kind of the one. And then the other part is continuing to create ways of meaningful participation through conversations, community outreach initiatives. You know, how can we support this new story, this new human story? And that's part of the experiment, you know, like what are the kind of conversations we can have? You know, I'd love to be able to talk to people who've been thinking about things for a long time and ask five people, hey, what is free will? And share that with everyone participating so we can start thinking about, you know, what is free will and what does that mean? Because these are the kind of questions that I feel are addressing, you know, the source of the river. So part of this process is not only to transform advertising. To me, advertising is just the biggest bang for the buck. If we're all, you know, a bunch of us, can you still hear me?
Yes, sure can.
Oh, sorry, my phone changed a little bit. If you know, as we get together and sort of start creating this new input, there'll be opportunities to figure out, you know, how do we continue the conversations, you know, and how do we celebrate the different paths that lead to the same castle, the same castle being a new narrative about who we are as a species and as individuals.
Well, I have time, I think, for one more question for you before Pavi takes on everyone else's questions and questions for you. You shared with me a story that seemed quite influential for you about how you read about this African tribe that couldn't see the color blue. I wonder if you could share that and a little what you learned from that and how that relates to the work you're doing in the world.
Yeah, there was a video that I saw, maybe other people saw it too. It was about the fact that they looked at these different texts all around the world, writings, and they found that colors came in sequence. So red came first as a word, and then yellow and blue, yellow and green, and then blue as the last one. And this tribe in Africa doesn't have a word for blue. And they did a test where they had a series of colored blocks, kind of like where the numbers on a clock would be. And one of them was blue and the rest were green. And they asked people in this tribe to, like, which one's the different one? And it turns out this tribe couldn't see the blue. And it just floored me because it would seem to me it doesn't matter if you have a word for blue. Like, it's so clearly different. And how can they not see it? And but then they showed another schematic of all the squares being green. And they looked identical to me. And they said, which one's different now to this tribe? And everyone got it as instant as I got the blue one. And they pointed to the one which was different, and I couldn't even see it after they pointed it out. And this tribe has many, 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 many words for green. And so the takeaway for me on this is that I started to think about, well, if we don't have notions that speak to this idea of unity or collectiveness or, even a notion of an intelligent, universe, it's not even a possibility in our life experience. So as we introduce these new concepts to ourselves that we may have not gotten growing up in the cultures that we grew up in and our neighborhoods and the adults around us, it seems like as we identify these new concepts and these new ideas that we will just naturally live into them. And so in a way, I could see Inspiration Campaign is just wanting to announce the color blue to our society. Like each billboard is kind of a reminder, an identification of blue, which is this new story.
I love that idea, and I that we, without like having languaging for things that we can't see them, without having some story about it that it doesn't necessarily seem possible. We even our experience tells us otherwise, and it brings up all sorts of questions for me, and it sounds like the relevancy for what you're doing is immense. With that, I'll just pass it on right now to just first of all let everyone know that if you have any questions you'd like to ask, we have on the chat line, you can go log in at Service Space and write those questions there. But now I'm going to pass over to Pavi.
Wonderful. Thank you, Aria and Robert, for a wonderfully fertile first hour of the call. As Aria said, you can send in questions through the web form or by hitting *6 on your phone, and you'll be added to the queue. I want to, in a few minutes, read some of the comments that have already come in. But before that, I wanted to jump in, Robert, and ask you, you've really used art as a beautiful vehicle for transformation and a powerful one. And it made me think of just this, the Picasso quote about how every child is an artist and the problem is how to remain an artist once he grows up. And I have this question about how did you hold on to that? When did you first know you are an artist? Or that everyone, and then eventually that everyone was an artist. Could you speak a little bit about your formative years and that led you to this path?
Yeah, thanks. I didn't really identify myself as an artist until later in life. I took a photography class at an art school when I was in college. I went to Brown in Rhode Island for my undergraduate, and they have a program with the Rhode Island School of Design. And I took a photography class there, you know, your classic introduction to black and white photography. And when I was in the darkroom at 2 o'clock in the morning watching images come up in the developer, that was the first time that this some creative component of me got activated. Yes. And I was just in bliss, really, of this match in my own creative outlet. And after I graduated from college and I moved out here right after in 1990, and I was living in the Bay Area, and I started to work with a photographer, and I started to do my own photography, and it still took me a long time to call myself an artist. I think because of the notion of how we're indoctrinated with, you know, an artist is someone who has work in a museum or a gallery or something. And over time, I realized that it's the creative act is an artist. Creating anything is an artistic action. And so, like, my concept of what it means to be an artist just has continued to expand and really come to involve any creative act to me is artistic, because you're starting with an idea. Like, imagination is the heart of creativity, and everything that you see starts as an idea, and then we use our free will of our choices to support bringing that idea into life. And that is artistry, you know, that to me, that is creativity. And so it's been really amazing to watch how that's changed. And there was a big shift for me as well when I did that first art installation, and I created this whole interactive piece, and then had these a circle of women and cast and a teepee, and people went inside, and the installation asked people, you know, to what do you pledge your allegiance, and had an opportunity for people to write. And the very first day after it was set up, I was sitting inside the teepee alone, and I watched this guy come in and poke his head in and check it out, and it inspired him to come inside. And he came inside and he took his backpack off, and he was kind of taking everything in. And after about a minute or two, I saw him reach for the piece of paper. And I was just, it was like a lightning bolt hit me. And I realized that was the whole impetus for this piece. Like, that act, that creative act on his part to declare something was like magic to me. And I, that did so much to see the creative act really expand. So,
beautiful. That's powerful, that description. And the visuals, too, of just the photos that you have of that installation online, they're hauntingly beautiful. I'm curious, because you use the metaphor of the seed, you know?
Yeah.
And what's fascinating to me is that seeds don't turn into just big seeds, right? They turn into something that, like, you don't really recognize it. When you look at the seed, you don't necessarily recognize the final, you know?
Oh, that's great, seed. Yeah.
And so when you look back, you know, into your formative kind of early years, I think in childhood, and, you know, just those different, like, when you were, you know, the kind of the field of your childhood, like, what were the seeds that you look back on that, you know, when you look back, the seeds that were planted that you can call out now as key to what's blossomed in you?
You know, the first thing that comes to my mind is my mom was drawn by the impulse of I guess spirit, of this sort of non-physical aspect to our lives, and which was very different. I mean, like, she was the only one that was holding on or speaking about those beliefs where I grew up. I mean, no one in my school, no one on the media, no television, anything. And my mom really planted that seed in me. It was like a concept of being more than this, than these characters. That there's a whole other wing to the castle, you know, kind of peeking behind the curtain of this kind of culture. And in that way, like, that seed has been growing in me for my whole life of looking out at the world that, that doesn't even acknowledge really that seed, but that seed has been growing in me. And really, that seed is that one of the fruits, one of the trees of that seed is the art that I create, are these installations that I created, and is the like inspiration, the sapling really right now of Inspiration Campaign. And I love your recognition that, you know, you don't know what the tree's going to look like from the seed. And like, I don't know what Inspiration Campaign is going to look like from the sapling. It's like this beautiful mystery of like, what is she going to be, you know, and what are our creations going to be, starting from the impulse of, you know, there's that great Rumi quote of being drawn by what you love. And to me, that's a seed, because what does that mean? What do I love? And what does it mean to be drawn to it? And what does it mean to be in service to it? And like the what we all do with that, or answering the question, you know, what would love do? That's a seed to me, because what love would do is each of those things are oak trees or any kind of tree, you know, it'll be a different tree for each person, so to speak. And so I so appreciate that with my mom. I mean, she was a pre-New Ager, you know, back in the 70s in her own journey. And it's like she handed me that baton, and I see how I'm standing on her shoulders to embody that. Because growing up on the East Coast, like, you know, there was no one else talking about that seed. And the fact that she was and ended up shaping so much of my cultivating that seed and thinking about that seed and noticing how that seed's not in our society and now being drawn to bring it into society in whatever way I can through my shifting of what art is and what creativity is I love thinking about all the things that I'm creating start from that seed. It's beautiful.
Yeah, and in that same metaphor, I guess that there's this incredible role that these, you know, that these gardeners like your mother who till the soil in a sense, that allows all of this to flourish. And that role is just so important. And there's something poignant about the fact that it is so invisible.
Yeah.
I wanted to hear a little bit about, because I think it's so interesting, this idea of disrupting and transforming advertising. And I think particularly working in the art, it's something that comes up with a lot of the artists that we've come across, is this tension, you know, between the where the art arises from, the kind of the wholesome universality of that space, and how it gets pulled into the, you know, the current paradigm of commercialism and an agenda, really, that is so different from the original impulse. And I wonder, like, what was that journey like, that it became, where it became clear to you that this you needed to disrupt this? You know, what enables you to kind of take on that dragon that for so many seems just too big to slay?
You know, it's interesting. I think my whole take on this has not quite been to disrupt what is, but to create something new. Here's a great, the story of how this started is really interesting. So when I did the third art installation, and I was about beliefs, and it was a birdhouse, and as part of that, I made up these little cards that had beliefs on them. And when I went to the printer to pick them up, we have a nice relationship, and he kind of gave me a little wink and said, "Oh, I made you a couple extra." And he had just let 10 more sheets kind of go off the press, and which gave me like 500 more cards or something. And so after the week of that installation was up, I had all these extra cards, and I started carrying them around with me and giving them away, and it's evolved into these inspiration cards that have, I think we've printed up over 100,000, and I give them out all the time, and it's been this amazing kind of journey of creating meaningful experiences with people. They're like little billboards in a way. And before Inspiration Campaign even existed as an idea, I was down walking with my dog down by the water's edge. I live in Tiburon, and I saw an airplane banner in the sky. And I had never seen an airplane banner in the sky here. And when I grew up on the East Coast, on the New Jersey, I grew up in Philadelphia, and we'd go to the New Jersey shore, and planes would fly up and down with kind of personal messages, these banners. And I think I was just nostalgic, and I thought that it would be that. But I couldn't see what it was pulling. And I was kind of teased by it. It would kind of be in the distance. I couldn't see it. And then there was another angle. And I was just walking. I was just aware of this banner because I was kind of excited to see it. And then I realized, oh, it's going to come right by me. I'm going to have like a front row seat of what this is. And as it pulled in front of me and went across the sky, it was that old Geico ad with the stack of money and the googly eyes on it. And I was just shocked. And I was so kind of embarrassed is how excited I was to see it. And I thought, you know, this is just the leading edge of this advertising bombardment, you know, that we've experienced. And it was like, this is, I got used to all the other stuff, but now not in an Indian summer blue sky, you know, down by the water's edge, this thing in the sky. It just seemed like it kind of crossed the line or something. And so I was in this state of kind of agitation. And then, you know, where do ideas come from? This idea, all of a sudden this thought was, hey, you have a pouch of cards. Like, what would it take to just pull one of those cards behind the plane instead of the Geico ad? And that really, that's the seed of Inspiration Campaign. It wasn't about not wanting the Geico ad. It was about what can be created instead. You know, how do we transmute something that is into something else? And so my whole notion of this is not, I don't have any really adversity or agitation, so to speak, against advertising. It's not about wanting to resist advertising. It's wanting to say, hey, what else is possible? You know, what else can we do? We have this, you know, communication system in place. How can we use it to inspire the human spirit? And so it becomes more forward-looking. And at the same time, it does disrupt this old paradigm that we've just come to accept. So it, like, has this magic in that. And that's why I think one of the reasons why it's so powerful is because it immediately changes, like, that's just the way it is into, oh, that's not just the way it is. Like, it can be whatever we want it to be. And addressing something that feels that fundamental to us and feels really powerful. But to me, the projects and Inspiration Campaign is really all about, like, what's the yes? What's our yes? It's not about saying no to a no, because that's sort of activating no. So, like, I strive to have this forward-looking creative act. Like, how can we use this infrastructure that's reaching billions of people every day? How can we use it in a new way, and totally transform and expand old paradigms into new paradigms in the same moment, in the same process?
I really appreciate that, and that distinction that you're making in terms of, like, not sort of standing up to slay the dragon, but kind of like looking at the energy behind the dragon and thinking, wow, like, what else can we do with this, you know?
Yeah, and, can we befriend the dragon?
Yeah.
You know, can we love the dragon? Can we figure out, like, transmuting, you know, the dragon into a friend, into an ally? That feels like that's the power to me.
Yeah. And I have a question, because I feel like, you know, for Ari and I and, like, many of our listeners, like, this is all speaking to a deep resonance within us and within our experience of the world. As you take this out, what's your experience been sharing this story and this vision with the world. I imagine that there are many places where the resonance is there. What has been your experience internally, and also how do you respond to that externally when there might be more opposition or kind of, cynicism?
You know, I think the best example of that is found for me in these cards. So like I said, I have this pouch of cards, and there's a deck of messages that I've curated over the last couple of years. So I start with 54 cards is in the deck, and I put them in my pouch, and I carry that all the time with me. And I give them out to, I see myself as a messenger for the divine cosmic universe, I'm here to give people these gifts. And so I give it to the butcher or the people who work at my supermarket, the UPS driver that drives in my neighborhood. I have the UPS driver stops when he sees me to draw a card, as does these brother sister who are 7 and 8 years old, that they see me and they ask me, if I have my pouch. And check out people at the supermarket, and the cards create this fundamental, meaningful experience that I think touches into the human experience, and it's like I remember hearing that the oyster needs a grain of sand to make its pearl, and I think these cards or these billboards are that grain of sand for some kind of meaningful moment. And my experience has been, it's 9 out of 10 respond positively to these cards, because that to me is our nature. So like I haven't felt or received any real cynicism about the transforming advertising. Like my notion is that the human being, like we're all like, it feels to me like we're metal filings. And we're sort of waiting for these magnets that can bring us together and align us. And my experience has been seeing people that way. Like the way I see people when I give them the card, it embodies this notion. And maybe 1 out of 10 doesn't trust me and doesn't even want to draw a card. But my experience has been pretty much 99 out of 100 that get a card, we have a meaningful experience. And that has given me this glimpse into what I see as this kind of universal experience, because I'm interacting with all walks of life and I'm having meaningful experiences with all of them. And the impulse on the cards is the same as the billboards. So I think that... that's why I think this is powerful, because it is this, by addressing people that way, it creates a certain degree of universality. And I think that's why this is a kind of a powerful way to bring people together, because it feels really inclusive as a way to like, hey, who wants to create positive input in society? Who wants to give gifts to people that they don't know? I remember, the Karma Kitchen notion, mm-hmm. as an example of, is exactly that. You have a meal and it doesn't cost you anything because someone that you don't know paid for it, and then you pay for someone that you're not going to ever meet. And I remember reading the article about that and then saying, my God, is this even going to work? Like, is anyone going to do this? And it turns out to be so wildly successful. In the same way, I remember I was asked, like, what's one of my most meaningful moments of in my past? And I remember the first time I paid for a toll behind me, and how much I was so excited, and I wanted to zip away so they didn't feel like they had to even thank me. Like, it was the anonymity that was so exciting to me, and that feels like that to me feels like the human spirit in action, and I think that's what we all long for.
Yeah, as you're talking and especially describing your pouch and the way you go through your day, I'm kind of thinking, gosh, this guy is like the Johnny Appleseed of inspiration.
I've been called that. It's really flattering. I love it.
Yeah, and I love that there's an element of playfulness. There's an element of no expectation in a sense. And there's an element of, I think, really that internal reward that's in the action being so deeply aligned with that. So that, you know, there's a little outcome right there. There's a little, or like a feedback, you know, in the humblest action that you're taking that, and I think safeguards against sometimes with advertising and just world projects in general, we get really ambitious and we're thinking so big that we forget to stay connected to the spirit. And in those small actions, I think that's where the spirit and that reconnection is happening. I feel like for you so many multiple times in a day, that it allows you to hold the big vision in a different way. And I want to ask about, you know, your relationship to ambition. But before that, just because we're on this story of the ripples and the cards, do you have a favorite story that has come from, you know, the tens of, you know, thousands of people who've seen your billboards?
You know, the one that comes to mind, which is really precious, was we had a billboard on Polk Street, and we got this letter from this woman who had been living there, I think, for 40 or 50 years. And she lived right on Polk Street. And she told the story of the morning where she got up, just another day, and she opened up her blinds, and her apartment was positioned directly opposite of a billboard that for years she had just seen as the normal blast of whatever someone was trying to sell. And this morning she opens it up, and it was our "You Are Amazing" billboard. And she describes what that was like to be gifted that, given her, it was so poignant in terms of her being this older woman and being in this apartment and just kind of accepting things as they were, and then to see what else is possible. And the way she wrote about it was, that's the whole point. I do think a lot of people that saw the billboards probably were waiting for the other shoe to drop in terms of maybe next month they're going to tell me what they're trying to sell, you know, kind of thing. So I wonder how many people actually, like, I doubt many people saw the billboards and thought, oh, this is I wonder if a bunch of people got together and chipped in some money and crowdsourced a message and wanted to give me a meaningful moment in this, you know, this instant. But that will change, I think, too, as the movement grows and people become more familiar. And then they'll see, like, part of it is when someone sees the most beautiful rectangle in their community, they'll know, oh, look, another inspiration campaign came out, you know, kind of thing.
Yes.
And as that happens, kind of like when Ari was talking about being, you know, surrounded by these other kind of messages and knowing the intention of them, you know, then that changes the person's experience and it'll just keep uplifting. But, you know, this woman had no idea, you know, what it was about. But she I think because of her perspective and having seen, you know, this front row seat for billboards for decades, she got it instantly, and it was beautiful.
That is such a great story.
Yeah.
I wanted to read you one of the several messages that have come in over the web chat. This one is from Leanne Christensen, and she says, "I am a believer and believe there is good in the world. I'm so thankful to see the growing passion surrounding kindness campaigns, random acts of kindness groups, and pages like the Good News Network. When the positive is shared, whether in print, in pictures, or in real life, it creates change in our outlook, our hearts and behavior, our homes, our schools, our communities, and our world. Thank you, Mr. Bankston, for your deeply inspiring work."
Oh, that's beautiful. Wow, thank you. You're welcome.
And from Mid Hunt, we have a reflection. "I read that you found an image in the cement of a sidewalk. I too found such an image, a single flowering weed about 6 inches tall, growing proudly in a seam between two sidewalk squares. Would like to send you the photo if I can."
Yeah, please do. I'd love to see it. Like that kind of awareness, that recognition of beauty in life, like that to me is a great example of someone self-navigating and looking at the world through a certain color glasses that sees that and appreciates that, celebrates that. That's definitely warms my heart. I love that.
I wanted to ask you a follow-up question to that, because I noticed on your website that one of the projects you have related to your photography is called The Art of Details.
Mm-hmm.
And it really seems about, like, just, you know, that lens of looking for those wellsprings of beauty that we sometimes may overlook, maybe because they're so familiar to us, or we've developed certain blind spots. Can you speak a little bit about the role beauty and tuning into that has played in your own life?
Yeah, that's this trajectory of as a photographer kind of came to that realization, and it was really prompted. Interestingly, I was over the course of 4 years. This is about 10, 15 years ago or so, I found myself in these major cities just for 2 days. So I was passing through, I was in Paris, I'd never been to Paris, and I was in Paris for 2 days, and I was on my way to another assignment, so I had all my gear, and I thought, I'm going to photograph Paris in 2 days. And I just thought, man, how am I going to do that? Like, photographers spend their whole lives in Paris, you know? So how am I going to do it? And I got to the Eiffel Tower, and it was, you know, it was 1 o'clock in the afternoon. The light was terrible. You know, it just wasn't very, I wasn't going to get that super awesome, you know, Eiffel Tower shot. And so, I shot what I could. Like in that moment I thought, all right, well, where is the beautiful thing? And so I shot the 2 days, and then it ended up, I did London the next year. Then the year after I was in Barcelona, and the year after I was in Tokyo. And by the third one, I was kind of laughing, like, what? The universe, you're putting me in another city for 2 days I've never been to? And I was like, all right, I'm going to do it. And then a year or two after that, I had an open studio. I used to have a studio, photo studio in Sausalito, right across the Golden Gate Bridge here in the Bay Area. And I, for the first time, was doing an open studio. And when I was figuring out how to put the images together, I started to understand this idea of this narrative around the details and how my joy is really finding a detail that would kind of be overlooked and celebrating that. And I realized, oh, I like to tell a story of something by a series of images that embody its details. And it was through that really interesting collaboration with the universe, because I don't know if I would have quite discovered that had I not had this impulse and this opportunity to shoot in that way. And I realized how much that became an example of my whole life philosophy, which is finding beauty wherever you are, in whatever circumstance. And it's a matter of the intention to find it. So, like, my photography kind of became like an Easter egg hunt in a way, where instead of creating something, I was really finding it around. So if it's not over there, maybe it's up, or maybe it's down, or maybe it's left or right. And so that impulse to represent that, which is really how I try to live my life, became this really wonderful combo of being able to do that for clients. So, you know, clients will hire me to come in and say, take the details of their hotel or their house or their whatever and I feel like it's the details that speak to the essence of something, whether it's in the details of our choices as an individual, and what we notice and what we appreciate, and also these things that we create. You know, the detail of a tree feels like, oh, and that's how I get to know the tree. I love the overall tree, but only in seeing the bark or the leaves or the insects that live there. You know, it's like that's where the essence is. And so it was really fascinating, kind of watching my photography career, because I realized I didn't really want to be a big advertising photographer and creating in the studio and doing all that. That just felt very uninteresting to me. as a creative artist. And so this of celebrating details became this really interesting other facet to a larger approach of life that that is also at the heart of Inspiration Campaign, and kind of the celebration of the little things and the, how the details speak to the greater whole.
I love how all the details in your life actually do the same thing.
Right. Yeah, totally. And in all of our lives, you know, that's the magic, I think, to look to that to discover, you know, who we are and what life is.
Yeah, and it reminds us of the Marcel Proust quote about the beauty of discovery is not in seeing new landscapes, but in having new eyes.
Yeah.
Before we go to our last question, I wanted to ask a quick one before that is, you know, it seems like you're aligning your life with the intelligence of the universe. You're stepping into this, you know, this greater current. And that can bring a lot with it, of energy with it. And how do you stay grounded? Do you have daily practices or any kind of, you know, yeah, any practices that help you stay in your center?
Yeah, I do. I have a practice starting off my day where I'll have some lemon water, kind of start my day, and then I have a kind of an acknowledgement, a communication that I say to the universe in terms of just recognizing this mystery that is and that I'm a part of and that I came from and that I'm returning to, and I kind of just strike that as a tone. And then I'll sit. I'll just sort of sit in the presence of that as part of starting my day. And actually, before that, I started a couple years ago doing what's called this five sequence of the Tibetan rites. And it's these five series of movements that really kind of activate and recognize and acknowledge my stardust and it feels like in a sacred way. I've never been much of a gym goer, and the practice of starting the day with the rites is a real acknowledgement of the body, and then the practice of this mantra and this communication to this mystery of the cosmos, and then sitting in that mystery helps me strike a tone for the day and align myself to having faith in that and trusting in what's happening and seeing everything as in a form of perfection, as a way of helping me become more of who I came here to be, seeing everything as a perfect piece of that process for me. And I think the experience of waking up and setting that tone feels really it feels really helpful to me, because it's a way that helps remind me and ground me to the curiosity and the mystery and the faith and the trust in the kind of the miracle of all this, and for me to be doing what I can in my day to participate in the most life-affirming way that I can, and striking that tone to start the day, I find really, really helpful and important.
That's a beautiful answer. And we are at the 10:30 mark, and so I do want to, before we do our closing moment of gratitude after this call that's flown by, want to ask you the question that we ask all of our guests, which is, what can we as a community, as an ecosystem within, you know, service space and beyond, do to help support your vision in the world?
Thank you. You know, as we mentioned, this is kind of a calling, coming out call for this new chapter, which feels like a fresh start for this new project. I mean, we've been doing billboards and things for the last couple of years, but as I took the last year and a half off to be on my own journey and bring these other pieces in, it really feels like a fresh start. So I would invite everyone to go to the Inspiration Campaign website, which is inspirationcampaign.org or .com. They both go to the same place, and watch the video to get an idea about what this, a deeper idea on what the vision is, and to climb aboard. There's a way you get on the mailing list. I'm starting to create a launch team. We're raising money to build the ship, and this is kind of the process of opening it up to that creative act, that curiosity. You know, what does this look like, and how do we do it, and who feels aligned to be a part of it, and you know, creating these different opportunities for people to get involved. And so the first step would be to I think go to the website and watch the video and reach out and sign up and climb aboard, and we'll set sail on this journey together, because there's a lot of different pieces that need to be addressed, and the seats are available, so to speak, around the table for people to participate in ways that they feel inspired and aligned to be. So that would be the first step, and join me in this journey.
Wonderful. Well, thank you for that grand invitation. We'll definitely send out these links to everyone who are on the call and who RSVP'd, and be sure that they have a way of staying connected and staying involved.
Yeah, thank you.
We will now conclude where we began with that moment of stillness, and this time in gratitude for all the gifts that you've shared and are continuing to share with the world. Robert, thank you so much for walking the path that you are, and for inviting so many of us into the truth and beauty of that vision. We will do a few moments in gratitude, and then I will unmute everyone for a collective thank you. And on the count of three, thank you, Robert. One, two, three. Thank you,
thank you, thank you so much.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
All right. Beautiful day, everyone. Bye-bye.
Bye, everybody. Thanks.
Thank you for listening to a recording of Awaken Calls. To access archives, visit us at www.awaken.org. And to get more involved, volunteer at www.servicespace.org.